Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, rating hospitals, doctors, and long-term care. Smarter choices start at calqualitycare.org. URS, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, working to improve California's public infrastructure, preserve the state's natural resources, and strengthen the environment. URS.com. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
This is the California Report. I'm Rachel Miro in for Scott Schaefer. Coming up, we check back in with an undocumented teen from El Salvador trying to make a new life for herself here in California. And we head to Alcatraz to check out a politically provocative art exhibit from Ai Weiwei. Barred from leaving China, he had to orchestrate the exhibit from his studio in Beijing.
So this is really interesting conversation between control and freedom.
Also, is it almond or almond? We go to the heart of nut country to find out.
There is kind of an old farm story. It's a joke, I guess, and that is when we shake them off the tree, we knock the L out of it. And so that brings it to almonds.
It's the California Report. The number of unaccompanied minors crossing the Mexican border has fallen off dramatically since the summer. But tens of thousands of children are still here in the U.S., thousands here in California, waiting in legal limbo. Lawmakers across the state are pushing for money to fund legal support for Central American kids placed by immigration authorities in 14 counties. We begin today's show with a second visit to a family living this story in San Mateo County, south of San Francisco. Teenager Jennifer Cruz fled gang violence in El Salvador for a new life with her older sister. While she waits for the resolution of her legal case, she's been struggling to fit in at the local high school. Her sister Yesenia, who asked us not to use her last name, has been struggling to pay the bills. The California Report's education reporter Anna Tentakulis has more.
Most teenagers will tell you the hardest part of going to school is getting up early. Jenny rolls out of bed at 5:30 in the morning.
Ay, pereza de que no levantarme.
I'm so tired. I don't want to get up, but I know I have to.
Pero si me tengo que levantar.
So I'm up.
Her little nephew is still sleeping, so Jenny tiptoes across the hallway to the bathroom and gets ready. As she brushes her long brown hair, Jenny thinks back to the school uniform she had to wear in El Salvador.
Era verde con rojo y blanco.
It was green, red, and white. And I had to wear a skirt with long white socks and black shoes.
In America, the unofficial teenage uniform starts with skinny jeans. Jenny is wearing a black pair today and a red top with some sequins, plus black boots. Her sister Yesenia got these hand-me-downs from friends.
Well, sometimes my coworkers give me free clothes. I'll tell them that I have a sister and I'll show them a picture of her and they'll say, oh yeah, I have something that'll fit her.
Yesenia wants her baby sister to fit in, but Jenny is not your typical teenager. This is a kid who had guns fired at her when she walked home from school in El Salvador, who left her mom and the home she knew to journey across three borders in the hands of a smuggler. You'd think she'd be pretty tough. But Jenny says being a new student in a new country makes her feel vulnerable all over again.
I thought that maybe the kids were going to ignore me or tease me because I'm an immigrant. So when I showed up on my first day, I was trembling with fear. My hands were sweating. And when they asked me my name, I just froze. I didn't say anything.
She's been surprised to find lots of new immigrant kids like her at this school.
All right, say with me, question.
Question.
I have a question.
I have a question.
This is just one of 3-hour-long English crash courses that Jenny and other newcomers take every day. Jenny tested into remedial algebra, so she's taking that, PE and art, with other English-speaking students. It's coming along slowly for her, especially the English.
Oh, can I borrow the scissors? Can I borrow the pencil? Can I go... Can I go to the bathroom?
Even if she were fluent tomorrow, Jenny wouldn't be able to graduate. There's no way she can satisfy all the requirements in time. But that's not on her mind right now. What is, like any teenager, the excitement of making new friends?
Por la entrada en todas las gradas.
We all sit in the stairs and eat together, all of my friends. It's our little group. And if one doesn't show up to school, we'll call them on their cell phones and see what's going on.
But even here, she doesn't share everything. She doesn't tell them about El Salvador. The bus ride home is one of Jenny's few private moments. She heads straight to the back, taking a seat by the window. She thinks about her legal case and her mom. Her mother's been threatened by gangs, so she's taken refuge at a church in El Salvador. Jenny really worries. Then that night, an unexpected phone call. Her mom borrowed a smartphone, and for the first time, they have a live video connection.
Hola, mami. ¿Cómo está, mami? ¿Fue a trabajar?
Jenny bounces up and down on her bed with excitement. She hands the phone to Yesenia, who hasn't seen their mom in 10 years. Yesenia begins to cry. She's struggling to support 3 relatives, her own 4-year-old, and now Jenny.
It's very difficult right now. My husband is working extra to pay the rent. We pay for everything they need.
So it hurts when she has to miss work so she can make Jenny's legal appointments. After months of searching, the sisters have found a pro bono lawyer. They're working with her to build Jenny's court case so she can qualify under what's called special immigrant juvenile status. It's something Jenny worries about at night. Like here, when she talks into this tape recorder I gave her to keep an audio diary.
I'm here right now, and it's time to sleep. I really love being together here with my family, but sometimes I get scared when I think about my legal case.
Her legal case comes before the court in 3 weeks. For the California Report, I'm Anna Tentakulis.
Some in the art world are calling it the hottest ticket of the year. At Large on Alcatraz Island debuts this weekend. Ai Weiwei is a political artist the Chinese government won't allow to leave the country, not even to see his new exhibit, which explores freedom and confinement. Ai Weiwei makes headlines whatever he does, and At Large is no exception. KQED's Mina Kim went to see a sneak preview to get behind the hype.
The only way to get to the exhibit is to hop on a ferry.
Hey guys, welcome to The Rock. Mandatory orientation right over to your left.
Once you reach the island in the middle of the San Francisco Bay, follow signs that lead to a building marked Penitentiary Laundry. There, you'll be greeted by the head of a dragon kite.
This, in my mind, is the piece de resistance. I just got goosebumps.
Exhibit curator Cheryl Haynes takes in Ai Weiwei's piece called With Wind just before it's installed. It's massive yet delicate in a rainbow of hues that snake around columns of peeling institutional green paint. Haynes dreamed up the idea of bringing Ai's art to Alcatraz 3 years ago. The artist had just been released from an 81-day detention by Chinese authorities for alleged tax evasion. Haynes says all the works touch on themes of incarceration and individual rights, including the kite.
It's suspended above the viewer. It will be flying. It will be free. But it's also restricted within the building. So there's this really interesting conversation between control and freedom.
Restrictions and freedom are basically two sides of the same thing, the two faces of the matter.
That's Ai Weiwei speaking from his Beijing studio last month. Unable to travel after authorities confiscated his passport, the artist had to envision the space using blueprints and films, including this row of bleak prison cells for this next work, a sound installation that pipes in the voices of people imprisoned for expressing their views. In this cell, music by the Russian feminist punk band Pussy Riot plays from decaying air vents. In 2012, the band's members were sentenced to 2 years in prison for singing a song that protested Russian President Vladimir Putin. The U.S. is also implicated. A recording of a Hopi Indian chant plays in one of Alcatraz's psychiatric observation cells. 19 members of the Hopi tribe were jailed at Alcatraz in 1895 for opposing the forced education of their children in government boarding schools. The $3.5 million, mostly privately funded project, had to get clearance from the U.S. State Department to host one of China's most vocal critics on federal land, and none of the site's historic walls could be harmed.
We cannot touch anything or add anything. It's a hanging installation, like prisoners themselves who are only there for a period of time.
No doubt those obstacles also bring a lot more attention to the show. Chad Kerver, chief content officer at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, says Ai needs visibility in the West.
The more recognized he is, even though he's incarcerated at home, the safer he is from eventually being shut off completely or disappeared again, as he was in 2011. So it's a very dicey gamble that he's playing, because we know that the West's attention doesn't always guarantee political freedom in China, but it seems to be the path that he's chosen.
The fight to stay visible permeates this next exhibit called Trace, where more than 175 portraits of so-called prisoners of conscience made from Legos cover a building floor. Prominent figures like Nelson Mandela and NSA contractor Edward Snowden are among those fashioned in colorful plastic bricks, but many are likely unknown.
One thing about Ai Weiwei, he's really doing either research or he wants to understand.
Celebrated Oakland painter Hung Lu is close friends with Ai. Lu grew up during China's Cultural Revolution under Mao Zedong, and like Ai, China's politics and culture infuse her work. But she's wary of art becoming too didactic.
When you have a strong political agenda, a strong message, you have to be careful if you want to use an art form. Like the best movies, I always feel they didn't tell me who to like, who to hate.
Lu says she plans to take a serious look at his Alcatraz work and hopes others will get past his superstar status and do the same.
Ai Weiwei is super famous. Some people call him God Ai, Ai Shen. I think it's a little too far. It's important for other people to be critical.
Lu says she thinks Ai Weiwei would appreciate the feedback.
The fact that I can't leave China is the biggest restriction on this exhibition. For an artist not to be able to see the venue and afterward not to be able to interact with the audience, if I had to imagine the toughest restriction about an exhibition, that would be it.
The show runs through April 26th. For the California Report, I'm Mina Kim.
Monica Lamb helped produce this story. We've got photos of At Large online at californiareport.org. Lucinda Williams' new album, Down Where the Spirit Meets the Bone, comes out next week. Williams has enjoyed a long, rich career with 11 albums and a lot of well-loved songs, like Sweet Old World. She could easily till the old ground and call it a day. But this new album is a career-defining work, according to the California Report's pop music critic Steve Hockman.
Throughout Lucinda Williams' 35-year recording career, she sought out songwriting advice and criticism from one man, a noted poet who has served as her mentor. Miller Williams also happens to be her dad, still going strong at age 84. But for the first time, with this song, Compassion, she sets one of his poems to music. It's an intimate, moving tribute that both opens and provides a title for her new album, Down Where the Spirit Meets the Bone.
You do not know what wars are going on down there where the spirit meets the bone. Down there where the spirit meets the bone. Down where the spirit meets the bone.
Miller Williams is a strong proponent of economy of language. Over the years, Lucinda has embraced this paring of things down to the bone as her most immediately recognizable artistic trait, well, alongside her laconic southern-bred drawl. Often in the course of a song, she'll craft one short phrase and repeat it over and over until it's the very essence of emotion. And it's what ties this album together across a sprawling span of 20 songs. It's a vast sweep of emotions, from the tenderness of compassion to the tart anger of foolishness. Down Where the Spirit Meets the Bone is an ambitious statement, arguably the most so of Williams' already considerable career. And in another first for her, there's an array of guests helping out, which for some artists would seem a sign of insecurity, but here comes off as underscoring a sense of confidence. Jacob Dylan joins her singing It's Gonna Rain, at once hopeful and somber, the rain both a promise and a threat.
It's gonna rain. It's gonna rain.
And she enlists Tony Joe White to thread his distinctively swampy guitar through West Memphis, the real-life tale of a famously disputed murder case from the 90s. In her hands, it becomes an epic, backwoods gothic song story in the mode of Bobby Gentry or Tony Joe White.
The cookie methods that they used to frame an innocent man, hiding in the darkest secrets behind every picket fence. The way we do things in West Memphis. That's the way we do things in West Memphis.
The place where the spirit meets the bone is that thin line between hope and dread. Several songs catalog complaints, troubles, heartaches, a big mess, as one song title puts it explicitly. Ultimately, though, it's hope that tips the scale, no more profoundly than in When I Look at the World. I've been unwelcome, I've been unloved, she sings. But then she sees the world in all its glory, in a different way every time she looks at it. Simply putting out a 20-song double album is a risky move, and for someone known for artistic economy, something that might seem an indulgent disconnect. Is every song a treasure? Of course not. But with her spirited reach, Lucinda Williams, at 61, has made an album that stands with her best, a series of songs that ask us to join her in looking at the world anew.
Steve Hockman is a Los Angeles-based writer who covers pop music for the California Report and KPCC. He reviewed Down Where the Spirit Meets the Bone by Lucinda Williams. For today's installment in the series California Foodways, reporter Lisa Morehouse drops down into the heart of Central California to talk about land, religion, and nuts. Almonds are the top crop in Stanislaus County, bringing in $1 billion+ in 2013. Walnuts came in third. Nuts aren't just an economic powerhouse in this region. They're also key to the county's past and future.
You can tell just how important nuts are to people around here by going to a minor league baseball game. The team is called the Modesto Nuts. Bob DeGrasse and Tammy Krause have season tickets in a great location.
You put your beer right in the dugout, and I've got a Nuts baseball hat on, and you go, go Nuts!
There's been a team in this region since the 40s. In 2005, fans voted for this name. The mascots?
We have Wally Walnut and Al Almond, and now we have Shelly Pistachio. Clap your
hands! They goof around on the field between innings and pose for photos with fans. Like this row of kids wearing team caps, some with the almond logo, some with the walnut logo. Seven-year-old Gino Brunicki's choice has everything to do with his family's business.
Because we grow almonds.
And don't worry, we'll get into the great almond pronunciation divide later in the story. Earlier today, Shelly the Pistachio posed for pictures at a country fair just west of Modesto in a little unincorporated farming area called Wood Colony.
Ready?
You throw it in the basket?
You get three tries, okay? You can do it. Go!
Over 1,500 people from all over the region showed up to play games, check out the latest nut harvesting machinery, and sign petitions to support Wood Colony's continued independence from Modesto. Now, not everyone agrees about the exact boundaries of Wood Colony, but in recent amendments to the Modesto General Plan, the city proposed bringing about 1,000 acres of this area under its jurisdiction. That could allow commercial development on what's now farmland. People here are adamantly opposed. Signs line roads here with slogans like, almonds, not asphalt.
There's generations upon generations that grew up out here, and this is the one place where the city hasn't touched. And there's just too much history here. It just needs to be left alone.
Sherry Walker actually represents a big part of that history. She's wearing a long dress with a matching cape and a sheer bonnet over her hair. Some of the earliest founders of Wood Colony were from a religious group called Old German Baptist Brethren. They migrated from Germany to Pennsylvania in the early 1700s.
They went to Indiana and Missouri and Kansas and Ohio and North Dakota and out to California. They came first to Whittier down at Los Angeles.
That's local historian Lowell Bleacher. Around 1900, a group of German Baptists, which included his grandfather, came here and started farming and planted some of the earliest nut trees. Today, about a third of Wood Colony residents are practicing German Baptists.
Just a peace church, you might say, has a lot of the similarities to Amish and Mennonite, but they're not, historically, they're not connected.
One difference? The use of modern technology. Here, many German Baptists don't own TVs, but they drive cars.
Oh, they use plenty of technology. They're good farmers. I'm not saying that boastfully.
Fourth-generation farmer Jake Winger gives me a quick tour of Wood Colony's orchards and farmhouses. We stop to talk under a huge walnut tree, which Winger says is California's biggest.
The German Baptists are, for lack of a better term, California Amish.
He grew up around German Baptists. They're his neighbors and friends.
By their religious guidelines, they don't get involved in local politics. They don't vote. They don't register to vote.
But many of them are showing up at city council meetings along with their allies. The 99 freeway separates Wood Colony from Modesto. Jake Winger and others fear what could happen if the city claims any land across the freeway.
It's the proverbial camel's nose in the tent. Camel sticks his nose in the tent, you better watch out because the rest of it's coming.
He's part of a group that wrote a stamp out sprawl initiative to go on a ballot next year. They have until the 1st of October to turn in signatures, and they're hopeful.
Stanislaus County voters usually support farmland preservation. In the past, Modesto Mayor Garrett Marsh initiated similar measures.
They're drawing that line in the sand, and they don't want anybody to cross it. I get that.
But he says now the city needs to think about its future, expand its tax base, and plan for business parks and ag industry. Modesto could gain at least 100,000 residents in the next 40 years.
We already know that we can fit all those extra people in our current footprint.
By increasing housing density.
But it doesn't leave us anywhere to put the jobs for those people.
And Stanislaus County already has an unemployment rate of over 11%. But farmer Jake Winger says this is prime farmland. That's a USDA designation for some of the best ag soil in the world. And he says the German Baptists couldn't just relocate an entire religious community like they did in the early 1900s. He wants the city to look elsewhere.
I do agree. We can bring in manufacturing jobs. We just don't need to do it in the best farmland and one of the oldest communities in this area.
Farmer Gordon Heinrich takes me to an orchard where a mechanical shaker grabs tree trunks, rattling them so hard it looks like it's raining almonds.
We pronounce them almonds.
And here's one theory.
There is kind of an old farm story. It's a joke, I guess. And that is when we shake them off the tree, we knock the L out of it. And so that brings it to almonds.
And this land use fight has shaken quiet, private wood colony.
When the idea of annexation first came along, it really awoke a sleeping giant, so to speak, out here.
Take the Wood Colony Country Fair. Residents would rather keep to themselves, but they held this event, inviting outsiders in to celebrate rural living and get political support. While families take horse-drawn buggy rides past almond and walnut orchards, Claudia Bowser agrees to talk to me for this story, even though she doesn't even own a radio.
There's families here. There's roots here. We don't need cement and buildings and lifeless things.
She says once you take away prime farmland, you can't replace it.
The Lord knows already what the answer is. I just pray it will just stay this good old countryside.
It will if people across the region continue to see agriculture as their identity and vote as they have in the past. For the California Report, I'm Lisa Morehouse in Stanislaus County.
California Foodways continues next week. Lisa crashes a surprise party for hungry hikers on the Pacific Crest Trail. And that's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director is Susie Racho. The technical producer is Seal Muller. We had engineering support from Howard Gelman. The online team includes David Weir, Lisa Pickoff-White, Adam Grossberg, and David Marks. Our interns are Adiza Egan and Isaac Silk. The California Report's editorial team includes Victoria Malione, Polly Stryker, Ingrid Becker, and Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. Scott Schaefer returns next week. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funding for KQED Arts is provided by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, and the California Arts Council, a state agency advancing California through the arts and creativity.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children.